Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, the 26th day of October, 2012. We find ourselves at the end of the week and Friday on the front porch. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, your home for progressive conversation radio all across the country being the United States, of course, and all around the world. Wherever the internet goeth, we follow. The Horn is easily found at places like dar.fm, a handy site for setting up a recording of the program for later listening. You know, I told you last night we're number 12 in liberal political talk, but in progressive left, in that categorization, yeah, we're number one, baby. You better believe it. We want to stay that way. Dar.fm, all kidding aside, really is a handy way to make sure you get the show, especially if you're not listening live. We'll work on getting a link up on the website as soon as I get the code over to John. There are other places to listen, too, that are equally efficacious. TuneIn Radio is one of them. Stitcher Internet Radio is another. The Tuner Internet Radio app is handy for smartphones and iPhones. You can, of course, get the podcasts at iTunes. And, of course, the home of everything streamy and podcasty for The Horn is WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org, 10 years old this year. Probably at this point in time, it's moved into its 11th year. Ben Birch running that operation oh so capably for oh so long. WhiteRoseSociety.org, the podcast feed address is there. And Ben tells me he has gotten his sick machine back out of the shop. So with any luck at all, we will be back to normal podcasts popping up in the normal rerun running after Malloy on his stream. So cross your fingers. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I forget that part a lot. The program is easy to reach, be it Friday, Monday, Tuesday, days that end in Y, you know, that kind of thing. Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D at gmail.com is the email address. For contributions, the snail mail address is on the website, headonradionetwork.com, under the tab Contribute. It is, I will repeat for your listening pleasure now, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, personal mailbox, 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, WV, and the zip code is 25801. A gentle reminder, if you are sending check or money order, please do not make the check or money order payable to Bob Kincaid because Bob Kincaid does not get the money. Boss man Wayne picks up the mail at the mailbox and promptly forwards it on to our bank account and then uses it in the overall process of bill paying. Checks or money order contributions should be made to The Horn. The Horn. Or Head On Communications, or Head On Radio. Just not to Bob Kincaid, and not to Boss Man Wayne. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, of course, and this is listener-supported radio. pursuant to the math that our buddy Tom in California kindly did for us last night, what we look for is about $150 a night in contributions. That's what keeps things going. That's what keeps the lights on. As we come to the end of the month of October, we're looking at, we have made it, we have made our fundraising goal. We are trying to catch up on old bills. And we have about $1,000 worth of them staring us in the face. So hopefully we can keep it all rolling. Thank you very kindly. It is Friday on the front porch, a time to kick back, relax, maybe catch up on some stuff we missed over the course of the week. Little story here, little story there. This is, I suppose, the last gasp of warm weather, or at least for a while. A while meaning till probably May around here. Big old hurricane that has blown hell-bent for leather across the Caribbean, killed 38 people, is now trying to choose just what part of the Atlantic coast of the United States it will swat the out of. Predictions are being made that it's going to be ugly inland here as well, in the hills and hollers of almost level west by God, Virginia. Toward that end, I went outside today and pulled the cord and checked out the derecho generator. It started up. Needed to make sure it had enough oil in it. And I will probably go and fill up the gas cans just for fun. The rain is a pain in the ass. The snow, yeah, that too. But it's the winds I'm worried about. We're just about getting in position to get to do something about the roof here. And I guess it's better that these winds come and blow some more shingles off before we just do the roof than it is to do the roof and then have it blown away again. Oy, nothing's easy. So pardon my paranoia. Although I got to admit, I would much prefer for this much ballyhooed hurricane to be the Comet Kahootek. Remember that, you of a certain age? I would prefer this to be the Comet Kahootek of hurricanes. You know, a whole lot of talk, very little action. But I think in the age of climate change, the odds of that are significantly diminished, don't you? Just looking at the tracking maps and everything, this looks like a mess. But rest easy. It's okay. It has absolutely nothing to do with vast and pernicious modifications of the climate as caused by human activity on said climate, especially the intense heat-generating human activity of, say the last 125 years or so. Absolutely nothing to do with that. Hopefully, the plan is to be on the air next Monday. I will tweet over the weekend if anything goes sideways. I guess we're supposed to get the worst of it Sunday and Monday. I heard one meteorologist saying here where we are, we shouldn't expect much in the way of snow, but it will get cold. And it had to sooner or later, I guess. I've seen a couple of hornet's nests out in the woods. They're not low hanging. They're about halfway up the tree. That tends to indicate, you know, in old weather, weather predicting old folks kind of country kind of, right, that tends to indicate the winter will be worse. It will not be, because every time of it, pretty accurate, really. They're hanging low to the ground. You can let up a little bit on chopping the firewood. But if they're going on up the tree, bundle up. It's going to get fun. Because hornets don't like to have snow touching their paper nests, because it makes them all soggy and yucky and no good for hibernating in. So mosey on up to the front porch. Grab yourself a, I guess about this time of the year, maybe we ought to start putting out a pot of hot tea. I'm right partial to the teas of, News Ninja Susan turned me onto this years and years ago. A little company out there called republicoftea.com. Really good customer service, and I can get really good decaf teas. Although I have been slowly acclimating myself to a little caffeine here and there with one of their oolongs. And on cool days, it's mighty pleasant. See how those product drops just kind of happen organically and seamlessly? Anyway, mosey on up to the front porch. Cold glass of lemonade, hot cup of tea, or if you really want your belly warmed, that crockery jug over there with the corn cob stopper in the top's about 140 proof, and it'll warm you right up. I think today is peach. A gentle reminder. Well, it's not gentle, it's just what it is. For the foreseeable future, the toll-free number is out. Our toll-free number is being held hostage for a bill that I feel we do not owe and I will not pay based on the failure to perform of the other side of the contracting dispute. So that means if you want to get in touch with the program, you dial 304-658-3333. Easy, easy, easy. Or you can also make use of Skype. We've had a couple of good Skype calls. And it comes through pretty clearly as long as you've got a halfway decent microphone on your end. And, in order to reach us via Skype, my handle here is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And I'm signing into Skype right now. Fun little group happens midnight Eastern time on Fridays after Malloy's show is over. It was born out of the Head on Radio Network chat room and sort of metamorphed over into the Malloy chat room as well, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. See Sparky in the chat room for further information if you think it might be something you're into. But it is Friday on the front porch, and yeah, we reserve some of this time for stuff that may not have been so serious out or didn't get its due earlier in the week. Mercifully, my beloved, if defensively inept, West Virginia University Mountaineers have the week off. This is a week off in which hopefully the coaching staff up there is, I don't know, got them at a well and, you know, pumping water over their hands and spelling D-E-F-E-N-S-E. Defense. Of course, I didn't realize it, but the defensive coordinator of the Mountaineers, this is his first ever defensive coordinating job. Uh-oh. So, at least we can't give up 70 points this weekend. Next week, though, we're back to the fun stuff. I think TCU comes to town. And then, what, Oklahoma? Oh, yeah, real joy. But it is a football weekend. And that's college and pro. And, you know, we're real fans here of little Timmy Jebo. I don't know if you caught this or not. Maybe every other progressive talker in the world has already mentioned it, although mostly progressive talk doesn't verge over into sports very often, so maybe not. Yeah, we're big Timmy Jebo fans because we love it when he prays there and thanks God for letting a little African orphan starve to death because he was making sure that Timmy got a touchdown. It turns out that Timmy is not just America's best Christian and worst quarterback. He's also, really, a shrewd entrepreneur. You remember, of course, when George W. Bush looked at Jose Maria Aznar, the Prime Minister of Spain, and said, hey, you know what the problem with the French is? They don't have a word for entrepreneur. It's a true story, you know. Well, maybe he learned it by speaking in tongues or something, but little Timmy Gibo has certainly learned the word entrepreneur. I'm not kidding. He has trademarked the word Tebowing. Now, I'm still convinced that somewhere in the future, Tebowing will be defined as being a super pious Christian who is caught perhaps in a men's airport bathroom snorting meth off the butt of a gay hooker. But for now, Tebowing means bowing in the end zone on one knee and putting one's clenched, determined fist on one's helmet to thank Jesus for getting you that 6 points instead of seeing that, you know, a starving child ate and didn't starve to death, right? Yeah. No, really, really, really. Little Timmy Gibo has been trademarked by a marketing and consulting firm called XV Enterprises. I sure wish I was kidding. Little Timmy Gibo's number for a very long time has been 15, and XV is 15 in Roman numerals. I can't wait till he figures out, I don't know, Mayan numerology, and it'll be like little circle and dot, dot, whatever. Little Timmy Gibo is the sole shareholder of XV Enterprises. And, you know, they'll trademark Tebowing on T-shirts or Tebowing tennis shoes or, right, Tebowing man bags. Maybe a Tebowing bag for your trips to West Hollywood for your manis and petties. Now, what is not clear at all is where this all fits in with Matthew chapter 6. What's that, you ask? Well, I'm about to share it with you. Beginning with verse 5, of Matthew chapter 6, and when the, and it's kind of hard to square this up with a stadium of, you know, with maybe 70,000 people in it. And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are. This is Jesus talking here, mind you. Pay attention. It's the Lord and Savior. And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily, I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy end zone. And when thou hast kneeled thy knee and placed thy fist upon thy helmet, pray to thy Father, which is also in the end zone with thee. And thy Father, which seeth into the end zone, shall reward thee openly by making thee hit thy receiver crossing underneath the cover 3. Be not ye therefore like unto the Pharisees and the hypocrites, for your Father in heaven knoweth how many points thou needest to beat the spread, even before ye asketh it of him. Matthew 6. Not really Matthew 6. No, I'd love to hear little Timmy Gebo square this up someday. Thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet. Well, I don't think Timmy has to enter into any closets. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. You know, maybe a contract extension or a trade to the Jets. See, this is why I can't stand Christianity. Organized religion, but especially the evangelical fundamentalist variety. What's next? A line of designer crosses with the, instead of INRI, a little XV on the sign over the top? Questions rolling in, comments rolling in. Philip wants to know, Bob, does the hooker have to be gay? If not, let me know what airport and restroom she'll be in, and I'll be there. For Christ's sake, and Joseph Smith's as well, we could all use a cheap thrill before the coup. Oh, Philip's in a special place this Friday on the front porch, aren't you, Philip? That's okay, that's the way it's supposed to be. Cheap thrill before the coup. Well, I think for Timmy, the hooker has to be gay. Philip continues. Thanks to your sermon, Bob, I have seen the light and now understand that the good frocked folk in my former church confuse the word prayer with prayer, P-R-E-Y-E-R. It all makes sense now. Thanks, Bob, and don't forget the airport location. Well, you know, the one in Minneapolis is pretty... But no, I'd say, you know what, I guess maybe Newark International. You know, it's too much flash and dash at Kennedy or LaGuardia. No, your second string Jets quarterback might prefer Newark. Onward to dystopia, noting, well, there you go again, Bob, picking on them poor persecuted Christians. I guess. Philip brings something to mind, and that is a recent pronouncement by Glenn Beck, you know, the guy who just casually wrecks rental vehicles and watches them roll down the hill. Really, it's not even worth going into. Philip notes the difference between prayer and prayer, P-R-E-Y-E-R. Recently, the Beckerhead, announced that he was convinced that Bishop Willard Romney allowed himself to have his butt kicked all over the Lynn University Auditorium in Boca Raton, Florida, because the Lord told him to. Glenn Beck said, I am convinced that this is a man who prays on his knees every night. No, not praying on his knees. He's praying on American workers all over America. And that's the difference between P-R-A-Y and P-R-E-Y. The praying is done with an E when Bishop Willard does it. Ron and Raleigh noting, Bob, I guess being a Christian doesn't stop one from being a money-grubbing horse's ass. Well, but being a money-grubbing horse's ass should pretty much stop you from being a Christian. It should let you, I mean, if you're going by the book, literally. Biblos being merely a Greek word for book. Bibliography, bibliotheque, Right. It should let you out. But ever since John Calvin, I guess there's been an open question on that. Going back to something that I talked about last night, remember the Ocidax worm that Dr. John brought to our attention? Quasimoto writing in, Ocidax worms. Eyeless, mouthless, corporate Ocidax worms carrying hundreds of gelatinous stockholders feed on the bone carcasses of dead economies. I propose we rename the Ocidax to the Bain Capital Worm. Okay, I need to repeat the Skype handle. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. Bill in Cleveland noting end zone antics. Paul Brown used to rag the big-time showboaters, telling them to act like they'd been there before. I'd rather see dancing in the end zone than praying, because there's just something fundamentally offensive about thanking Jesus for your touchdown. Yeah, it was annoying, you know, when the Mountaineers finally scored a second touchdown last week against Kansas State late in the game. The young men were there high-fiving each other in the end zone. Like, guys, the other side's got more than 50, and you just got your 13th point. Get back to the huddle, okay? Clayton, the militant sociologist, asking, so Jesus Christ spoke English with an Appalachian accent? Works for me. Clayton says, who knew? Mercy sakes. But you've got... you've got the story of Tebow's trademark there, and Glenn Beck thinking that, oh yeah, and he got back to that whole comparing Willard Romney to George Washington thing again. Willard got wooden teeth or something? Yep, just the same. And there is one that's been in the stack for a couple of days. Maybe you've already heard about this. If not, I wanted to share it with you. I hate talking about this woman, you know, Anthrax Coulter, the Coltergeist. But on Monday night, as Willard was having his rear end handed to him, Anthrax Coulter tweeted the following. I highly approve of Romney's decision to be kind and gentle to the retard. Hateful word, that, retard. I always love it when right-wingers in places like Facebook and so forth, or occasional encounters on Twitter, refer to me as a libtard. The word itself goes back to, I suppose, Italian. It means to slow. But it carries a hateful freight in modern colloquial English, retard. And bless his heart, John Franklin Stevens, who has Down syndrome, couldn't help responding to the Coltergeist. John Franklin Stevens is a Special Olympics athlete and a global messenger on special needs children, or for special needs children. He wrote the following, and I think it needs to be shared out. Dear Ann Coulter. You'll notice it's Dear Ann Coulter, not Dear Ms. Coulter or Dear Mr. Coulter. No, it's Dear Ann Coulter. Come on, Ms. Coulter. You aren't dumb, and you aren't shallow. So why are you continually using a word like the R word as an insult? I'm a 30-year-old man with Down syndrome who has struggled with the public's perception that an intellectual disability means that I am dumb and shallow. I am not either of those things, but I do process information more slowly than the rest of you. In fact, it has taken me all day to figure out how to respond to your use of the R word last night. I thought first of asking whether you meant to describe the president as someone who was bullied as a child by people like you, but rose above it and find a way to succeed in life, as many of my fellow Special Olympians have. Then I wondered if you meant to describe him as someone who has to struggle to be thoughtful about everything he says, as everyone else races from one snarky soundbite to the next. Finally, I wondered if you meant to degrade him as someone who is likely to receive bad health care, live in low-grade housing with very little income, and still manages to see life as a wonderful gift. Because, Ms. Coulter, that is who we are, and much, much more. After I saw your tweet, I recalled I realized you just wanted to belittle the president by linking him to people like me. You assumed that people would understand and accept that being linked to someone like me is an insult, and you assumed you could get away with it and still appear on TV. I have to wonder if you considered other hateful words but recoiled from the backlash. I can guess at least one word that I'm imagining he was probably thinking of. It's speculative on my part, but we've been speculating for a long time now that, well, the right wing's itching to use the word, and especially in the case of Rick Bro Fro Mix Frothy Mixture Santorum, gotten pretty close. I didn't say black people, I said blah people. Or perhaps, we all remember candidate Obama, the anti-war pro-government nig. I have to wonder if you considered other hateful words but recoiled from the backlash. Well, Ms. Coulter, you and society need to learn that being compared to people like me should be considered to be a badge of honor. No one overcomes more than we do and still loves life so much. Come join us someday at Special Olympics. See if you can walk away with your heart unchanged. Signed, a friend you haven't made yet, John Franklin Stevens, Global Messenger, Special Olympics, Virginia. Our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent that along, and I wanted to make sure that I shared it with you. Because John Franklin Stevens has more class in his toenail clippings than Ann Coulter Geist has in the entirety of her being or the sum and total of her entirely worthless existence upon this planet. And when I say worthless, I don't use that as a throwaway adjective. I mean, what is the worth? What is she doing with the air that she breathes in? What is she doing with the space that she occupies upon this planet? Well, I just want to say that I support Romney's decision to be kind to the retard. Could Ann Coulter survive for even a day in the shoes of someone with Down's syndrome? Could she last 6 hours with the limitations on mobility that so many challenged people in this world face? Hell, she probably can't get past the fourth double of Grey Goose without falling off of her monoloblonics. But that's how she is, and that's who they are. Who are they? Jude sent this along. You're familiar with the nuns on the bus, right? Real, live, honest to Jesus, married to Jesus, nuns, Catholic nuns. People who minister on a daily basis to people in the direst form of need. In the early days of the church, women having been left out of the priesthood and having been rendered second-class citizens even within the terms of their own salvation by things like 1 Corinthians 14 that we discussed the other night, that tells them to shut them up in church, and if they've got any questions, wait till they get home and ask their husbands. Well, the church finally found a niche for him. They said, okay, well, if you'll stay a virgin like Mary was, and you'll wear nothing but black, and you'll deal with the people that the priests just really don't want to, we'll make something special for you. And beyond the bad rap that they've gotten as sort of parochial school brutes, there are nuns out there who really do minister to the needs of hurting people. And I can revere some of that. I don't understand how they can remain part of a church whose main mission in the world seems to be to shtup little boys, or as a clearinghouse for priests like to do that. That's beside the point. These women really do try to minister to the needs of people who are hurting and suffering in our society and others. And so a group of them got together and formed something called Nuns on the Bus. And they started taking their bus across America to talk about the real world crises that working people, working poor people, poor people in general face every day, and what it will mean for them for something like, say, the Paul Ryan budget to be made a matter of law in this country. They have been greeted with considerable popularity. Well, until recently, that is. It was Monday, the 15th of October, when they rolled into Marietta, Ohio. These nuns on their bus. Marietta, Ohio is a very old town. It sits hard by the Ohio River, just across the river from Williamstown, West Virginia. It was at Marietta, Ohio, if I recall correctly, that one John Chapman got off a boat from Pennsylvania and struck out across what was then known as the West with a bunch of apple tree seedlings. Now, not one of those apple trees ever grew an apple fit to bake into a pie or just pluck off the tree and eat. But they were mighty good for making into cider so that the folks on the frontier could get a little bit of respite from a life that was undeniably nasty, brutish, and short. You know, while they were out there stealing the land from the people who'd been on it for 10,000 years or so. Cultural genocide is hard work. You gotta take a little break and get effed up. So that's Marietta, Ohio. But Marietta, Ohio apparently also has a contingent of teabaggers. And the teabaggers were all ready when the nuns on the bus pulled in to Marietta, Ohio. They had their poorly spelled signs, or perhaps they'd spell checked them this time through. Signs that said things like "bums on the bus" and "Romney Ryan yes, fake nuns no." There's a YouTube video out there of the teabaggers. They make Osadax worms look downright well-mannered. Their video says, "What could be more innocuous?" Unless, of course, the nuns happen to be a group of radical feminist ideologues whose previous political actions have been so out of step with the teaching of the Catholic Church that they have been condemned by the Vatican. And a reminder, vote your values. Is there any audio with this? Let's find out. Oh, Jesus, they're repeating something or another that they're supposed to repeat. Interesting. For all this claptrap about contraception and abortion, you know the church has only had a position on it since about 1930? Really? So it's not the long-standing historical position of Holy Mother Church. It's kind of a doctrine, it's kind of a dogma come lately. But there they were. Harassing nuns. That's your classy text enough already, party people. Baggers. What's got them in such trouble? What we're hearing people say is that giving tax cuts to the very wealthy is not the way to go. Trickle-down will not provide jobs. What we're seeing is the real job creators are the sisters, the nuns, the people who operate in these not-for-profits, the people who operate in our local governments. They're the ones that are doing the job creation, not the wealthy, who seem to be saving their money so they become wealthier. For that, these women get labeled bums on the bus. Classy bunch. Huh. going back to the Coltergeist story, Ron in Raleigh writes in and says, the only time I use the word retard is when I'm considering the cam timing on my Corrado. These people are so completely without care or concern for their fellow citizens, yet they think of themselves as the salt of the earth, the type of people we should all strive to emulate. As Mike Malloy says, have I told you lately how much I hate these people? With regard to anthrax Coltergeist, Ron notes, with dogs the size of hers, I think she sports Jimmy Choo's. Andy writing in under the heading, Willard Showing Kindness. U.S. Steelworkers President Leo Girard mentioned yesterday that a university study showed Mitt Raw money sent 66,000 workers to the curb, you're fired, during his tenure at Bain. He wasn't too kind to them. I wonder how many of those workers or members of their families died or suffered because they lost their health care. Indeed. And curiously, out of those 66,000 workers, there was one human being who wanted to come forward and say that getting my life destroyed and my family's life destroyed by Bishop Willard Romney was the greatest character-building event that has ever happened in our lives. Sure, we lived in an old refrigerator box for a while, but it built character, and we've got more family values now. We don't have as much family, since a couple of them passed away for want of health care, but we've got more family values. No, that's not out there. Oh, by the way, are you up on this one, speaking of family values? Now, this is not Budweiser, this is Bodenweiser. Eric Bodenweiser has been a right-wing, teabagging, family values Christian candidate for state senate in the state of Delaware. Oh, he has family values. Eric Bodenweiser worries about the little fetuses. Yeah. Concerned about what women do, what them demon-possessed women do with their bodies. So it comes as no surprise. Just as in the future, the Tim Tebow story will come as no surprise. It comes as no surprise that Eric Bodenweiser has been indicted by a Sussex County grand jury this past Monday, Sussex County, Delaware, that says on, at least 50 occasions? Because there's 113 counts to the indictment. Probably a couple of different crimes in there. Between October 1987 and August 1990, when the boy was between 10 and 13 years old, that family values, Bible-believing, personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ having repig-licking Eric Bodenweiser had sex. His accuser stepped forward when Bodenweiser started running around the state of Delaware talking about his family values in his campaign to be a senator for the teabaggers in the Senate of the state of Delaware. Speaking to the local paper, the victim said, I just want to get through this and move on to the next step of my life. I've been carrying this around for 25 years. Could it be that the right wing, and especially these, what did Tina Fey call them, gray-faced men with $2 haircuts? Could it be that they have such a hard time conceiving of rape because they've got a taste for it? Bail was set at $250,000 for Family Values upstanding follower of Christ, Bodenweiser. And damned if he didn't make bail. Under the condition that he have no contact with the victim or anyone under the age of 18. His accuser has written, you know, the victim. How can anyone vote for a man that has some pretty scary skeletons in his closet? I'm coming forward now with my story to bring an end to Eric Bodenweiser's lies and deceit to the general public. This so-called God-fearing man molested me for several years at his home in Kuellen Acres in Frankfurt. He was in a position of power then, and I'll be damned if I'm going to allow him to abuse that power now. Among other things, he has had secured the endorsement of Not a Witch, Christine O'Donnell.
Not a witch, I'm not a witch. They dressed me up like this, and this isn't my nose, it's a false one.
Upon being inquired of by the newspaper, Matt Moran, no, really, an aide to O'Donnell, she has an aide, who's a Moran, said, "We'll pray for all parties involved." Yeah, bet you will. Bodie's Dairy Markets is where Eric Bodenweiser made his bucks, a string of rippy marks in Delaware. Goes to the Sussex County Babel Church. He's backed efforts to compel public prayer in the schools of Delaware. You know, whenever you see one of these stories, usually there's some sort of enabling connection to a group that would provide, you know, like Jerry Sandusky had the Second Mile Foundation. Bodenweiser has bragged that he's a current middle school volunteer, and that he'd been a mentor inside Big Brothers and Big Sisters in the past. Mary Fox, the executive director of Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Delaware, said, "We have no record of him. I can't confirm or deny that he was ever involved with us. I've never heard his name. I've never had a complaint. I obviously, we're very concerned. Don't sue us." I mentioned that he had been endorsed by I'm Not a Witch, I'm Just Like You, Christine O'Donnell. Yeah. She talked to a radio station after the indictment. Nobody's really gotten through to her with that "why don't you shut up" message. You're not that bright. She described the indictment of her endorsee and upstanding Family Values follower of Christ, personal relationship with Lord Jesus Christ, right. "That's why these sort of charges are so potent as political weapons, because they pull a seed of doubt in someone's mind." Christine, let's not talk about anybody putting seeds anywhere when we're talking about the repeated rape of a boy between the age the time when he was 10 and the age when he was 13. You better watch yourself, or somebody's going to drop a house on you.
If you do it as an October surprise, there's not enough time between when they throw the bomb and Election Day for the truth to really emerge. And it's just, well, it's tacky.
Indicting a man on charges found credible by a state police investigation, followed by a presentation to a grand jury and examination of the indictment by a sitting judge.
It's just tacky.
Welcome to Christianity, where politics, well, politics trumps everything, doesn't it? Philip noting, under the heading, more of the same, as far as I'm concerned, Coltergeist needs to be put down. Even as a small boy, I was taught that any animal that frosts at the mouth and acts viciously needs to be euthanized because it has rabies. Come on, Ann, the rest of us learned to stop shocking our parents and other adults with toilet bowl phrases by the age of 5. How are Sean Hannity and Dinesh D'Souza, which goes well with wild rice and fried mushrooms, although it's not as tasty as Baba Ganoush, able to afford buying all of your books to keep you on the bestseller list? It's time for you and your cronies to put your money where your mouth is and stop using the public airwaves overseen by the detested government. From your own damn network and form your own damn network and transmit it privately on independently owned airwaves while compelling your adherents to pay for view. Although I realize the word brings up unpleasant connotations, it's time you and the other antediluvian cretins on Fox leave the public airwaves open for more credible television such as Gilligan's Island. We just got cable, after Philip says, after going without it for a year, and the only things I can stomach are PBS, Bookspan, and the Patriots. Sorry, Bob. Last week I sat the family down and said to the wife and daughters, let's watch Bob's team on national television. Oh, no. Who were those guys in West Virginia uniforms running around helplessly and haplessly after Geno Smith and the offense left the field? Well, the offense was pretty hapless, too. I would have been annoyed if I were Kansas State because they were visually distracting, but fortunately they kept out of Kansas's offense's way and didn't impede them. I haven't witnessed anything so painful since Tony Eason crumbled before the Bears defense in 1985 and the Patriots had to insert the quarterback recovering from a broken leg in to save some face. Since you're on a religious bent this evening, I didn't mean to be, when Romney and his buddies talk about creating jobs for the rest of us, are they using a small or a capital J? The capital J seems far more to their liking. I'm wondering whether our wives will soon be in binders or just bound in the new Gilead. True, true, true. Jim takes issue with my reference to Tim Tebow. He thinks I'm being homophobic. I find your comments re-sniffing meth on a gay hooker's ass patently offensive. You are being an ass and without intellect and humor. If you don't think it's funny to imagine the day when Tim Tebow finally gets caught sniffing, snorting meth off a gay hooker's butt, you know, just like Ted Haggard, or toe-tapping in the men's restroom of the Minneapolis International Airport, just like Larry Craig. Well, it's not the act that's funny, Jim. It's the hypocrisy. I mean, come on. How many 22-year-old guys that boast in interviews, in my spare time, I like to go to the Philippines and help out with circumcisions. So it was certainly not homophobically intended. There's not a homophobic bone in my body. But then again, I also like the words of Morgan Freeman, who said, you're not homophobic. You're not afraid. There's no such thing as homophobia. You're an asshole. Morgan Freeman on people who are homophobic. It's just a fancy word.
Well,
Like I said, I've got a stack this evening. I'm not going to sit here and just filibobster away, however. By the way, a new a neologism out there for you. You know that Bishop Willard Romney has still not pulled his endorsement of Richard Moerdoch, the rape is a gift from God guy over in Indianistan. Assuming that this guy gets elected, I think I've come up with a new word for that. They will not be Indianistan. They will be Talibandiana. We hit that one last night. But we have a new word for right-wingers who support Bishop Willard Romney and worry about and think about, agree with the notion of rape being a gift from God. You ready for this? Write it down. They're misogynists. Ooh. Never stops. Middle of the night. Yeah, that kind of, yeah. Misogynists. Well, yeah, absolutely, Clayton. No offense was meant to sex workers in that whole thing. No. In that scenario, the gay hooker would be the one who was respectable. But by the way, let's just finish this off. Apparently, to Christine O'Donnell in Delaware, you can still be a Christian after you have had sex with a boy between the ages of 10 to 13 years old, you know, from a position of power and authority. Right. Yeah, it's just tacky to indict them, you know. But there is something you cannot go without and still be a Christian. Or so saith Gary Cass, a former member of the executive committee of San Diego's Republican Party. He's head of something that he ginned up inside the thin gray settling sloshing between his ears that passes for a brain called the Christian Anti-Defamation Commission. He was invited to speak at the Deliver Us From Evil conference in the Upper Room Church in Keller, Texas, which probably only has one story. They're just not that bright. And there at the Deliver Us From Evil conference, Gary Cass wanted them to understand what it takes to really, really walk in the footsteps of the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer.
If we were a virtuous and moral people, we would not elect the kind of politicians that we elect that have no biblical moral compass. Americans regularly elect politicians who can...
Wait a minute, a biblical compass? Is there anything in the Bible to indicate that they even had one? I think the Chinese came up with a compass along about in there somewhere. But you know, this guy's a literalist. A biblical compass. I'm lost.
Justify killing innocent...
Lost, you're damned! Sorry. Oh, wait, we got to get back to where he's talking about the little innocent fetuses.
Biblical moral compass. Americans regularly elect politicians who can justify killing innocent babies made in the image of God.
And eating them for breakfast every morning with a little bit of bitter orange marmalade and fine Irish butter.
That is a broken moral compass. America regularly elects politicians who...
I mean, does a biblical moral compass point toward true batshit? I don't know.
Can justify redefining God's institution of marriage.
Do we have to go into this? God's institution of marriage? Really? The one with all the wives and the property transfers for camels and sheep and goats and peacocks and, right, chickens?
That is a broken moral compass. We tolerate judges who allow for pornography and blasphemy.
We tolerate the judges. Tolerate. Could just shoot them, but we tolerate them. Because they uphold pornography and blasphemy. Blasphemer! Stone the blasphemer! Oh, listen, I just had a lovely piece of halibut, and I said that piece of halibut was good enough for Jehovah. Oh, he said it again! Stone the blasphemer! Stone the... Right.
Yet won't allow us to have prayer or Bible reading in our schools, and we let it happen.
Liar! There's all kinds of praying and Bible reading in public schools all over this country. If there was a little less of it, maybe we wouldn't be like 973rd in math and science. And yea, verily did El Shazlalibar look upon the frog and gather it unto his bosom and carry it to Noah, saying, Save thou the frog! And that's how we... Right. What did Bill Hicks say? The true story of Easter? Why can't we make it interesting? Like... A goldfish put Lincoln logs... Mommy, a goldfish put Lincoln logs in me sock drawer. Yes, and that's the story of Easter. Yeah.
Our formerly great Christian universities have now become perverted factories of unfaithfulness.
Really? Our formerly great Christian universities? Which ones? Baylor? Notre Dame? Texas Christian University? The hell's going on there? Sounds like a pretty good time. Well, they're dancing. I tell you, they're dancing.
Remember Harvard's motto in 1642?
Oh, Harvard, of course. Well, they were Unitarians anyway, right? Congregationalists, right.
Veritas et Christo et Ecclesia. Truth for Christ and for the church. Now, look at Harvard. This once venerable institution of Christian learning has become a radical bastion of unbelief, and frankly is probably...
And science! They're doing science there! Radical unbelief.
Probably the leading enemy of Christ.
Probably study Osedax worms and stuff there.
And the church. Animated by the spirit of Antichrist.
Animated? Really? Not claymation?
For the past 100 years, secular progressives have abandoned the Word of God for the satanic doctrines of Karl Marx, and as a result, we're bankrupt.
What, Edith?
The satanic doctrines of Karl Marx, and now we're... I am... desperately resisting the urge to smack myself in the head to try to make that make sense. Am I to understand, then, that the Wall Street bankers who put up the whole hedge fund housing bubble, giant, ginormous, humongous, the carny, con, fraud, bunko scheme... were secretly Marxists out to bankrupt the world? Really? Jamie Dimon sitting behind his desk whistling the Internationale? Honestly? Tim Geithner sending out emails saying, Bankers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains? How much acid do you have to drop before you walk into the upper room church with one story? And have this stuff make sense?
so-called progressive Christians, sound familiar, have abandoned God's word for Marxist liberation theology.
Really? It's Marxist liberation theology. Bishop Oscar Romero was gunned down for Marxism, not for the teachings of Jesus Christ. You know, it's interesting because I had an email exchange with Dr. John earlier today where we were talking about a whole lot of this very thing. And I had asked him, based on the conversation of last night's weird little filibobster, John had written in and said, about last night, you know, Dr. John is our staff anthropologist and archaeologist. About last night, and I usually get nervous when I see that phrase, but not this time. You're right again, Bob. Foragers typically work around 12 hours a week, and nobody in the group goes hungry because everything is shared. Only around 60%, get this. I mean, this is real science. This has been documented. This was what life was like before the advent of agriculture, that kind of stuff. Only around 60% of adults actually contribute food. The old and the young don't hunt or gather. By the way, the men typically do the hunting. The women typically do the gathering. And of the work that's expended, more is expended by the women than the men, you know, wandering around in the woods looking for... Right. The old and the young don't hunt or gather. The former did their work and are expected to take it easy and be provided for, and the latter will take over once they get old enough. And the thing is, Dr. John notes, humans are really good at that sort of lifestyle. We've been foragers for 2 million years, even longer if you define human less conservatively than I do. We've been capitalists for, say, what, 250 years at the outside? Yeah, which was the more successful life strategy? After a question to me from John, or a question from me to John about, I asked, could we then perhaps understand Marx and Engels is attempting to fit some sort of vaguely remembered, you know, in a Jungian kind of sense, vaguely remembered notion of a common humanity into an all-the-time brutally modern scheme? I told John I've always wondered about that. With the exception, I said, of Americans awash in flag and country, don't we somehow at least suspect that this isn't how it's supposed to work? Isn't that why religions, gods, having first been invented, then began instructing on the value of charity? And there was John, Dr. John. He didn't get that Ph.D. off of no box of, book of matches that says Draw the Pirate. He worked for it. Dr. John says, Marx and Engels definitely were keyed into what was at the time cutting-edge anthropology on small-scale societies. They cited people like Lewis Henry Morgan, who wrote about Iroquois economics and family life. The thing is, notes Dr. John, there's a huge difference between work in modern industrial capitalism and work among foragers and pastoralists. In the latter, your work is embedded in your social life. You hunt with your father, you gather with your age cohort, who are probably also related by marriage or blood. You directly access the resources that make up your social life and keep you alive. In capitalism, however, you don't work to produce your food and clothes and tools. You work for a wage, which then buys your food and clothes and tools. You're selling your time to a boss. You're working with people you're not related to, and the means of sustaining and reproducing your own life are acquired outside your productive work. There's a deep split between culture... Listen. There's a deep split between culture and economy that's foreign to 99% of our history as humans. Agriculture creates surplus, which requires management and private property, so we get social control. And it creates wealth disparities, which snowball, leading to wealth-based elites and commoners. And once some people own something, there's motivation for others to come and take it. John says, you've got it exactly right. And what he means by that is my assertion, my question, did the rise of sedentary agriculturalism provide the impetus via scarcity of resources for the first human social scale violence? What a clown this. Oh my God. But he's not done yet. He hasn't gotten to the punchline.
And in doing so have murdered their own souls, destroyed their own churches, and have undermined our nation. By the way, I've got a whole sermon. You can't be a Christian.
Oh, wait. Okay, pay attention. Perk your little ears up.
Our nation. By the way, I've got a whole sermon. You can't be a Christian if you don't own a gun. That preaches in Texas, don't it?
That preaches in Texas, don't it? You can't be a Christian if you don't own a gun. Well, sure. I mean, what would Jesus have said to Peter if he didn't have his sword out? What would he have said? Peter, run along now? He said, Peter, put up thy sword. Can't be a Christian unless you own a weapon. Onward, Christian soldiers, baby! Marching as to war, with the cross of Jesus going on before. How are you going to follow Jesus' commandment of, come on, y'all, let's make and go and make them little children suffer, if you ain't got no weapon to make them suffer with? What, are you going to stone them? What do you think this is, the 9th century B.C.? Oh, wait. Yeah. Whew. Can't be a Christian if you doesn't own a gun. I just get this little idea that, you know, maybe he's, got some of his own dogma and theology. Bass backwards? Sure does put a spin on render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. 30 caliber. Daggum. Well, that's about enough filibobstering for me. We'll take a little break and come back. It is Friday on the front porch. You know how to reach the program, 304-658-3333, or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Let's get the conversation going. Otherwise, we'll have to just sit through... 2 days of silence and hope that Sandy doesn't just whack the snot out of West Virginia or the cold air mass that's going to get sucked in and dump snow on us. Whatever. The Horn is listener-supported. We can always use your support. We have reached our goal for October. We have beaten the Swede. You have, not we have. But it would be nice, as Tom noted, and as many of you noted last week, or last month, to try to get a little bit ahead. So maybe we will. Your calls when we come back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thinking ahead means preparing
thinking
for the future.
Means preparing
the future
for
our children,
our grandchildren,
and our wild, wonderful West Virginia.
And our wild, wonderful West Virginia.
Developing our renewable energy.
Developing our renewable.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox.
Oh, wow. I think the little file player has been into that earthenware jug with the corn cob stopper. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Head On has just entered a bizarro universe with that looping.
Yeah, I know.
We crossed into a different galaxy with that one. It's interesting what you were talking about on the definition of retard, and I wonder if do you think it can be used in any way? Is what I'm saying.
The word?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is a perfectly legitimate word, Italianate word.
Mm-hmm.
It's used every day by music readers all across the globe.
Okay.
Retard, it means to slow down.
Well, what I'm getting at is to me, this is a little bit of, I don't like going in this direction when it comes to dictionary, and I'll give you an example. You had Ron from Rally use the term cretin. The origin of cretin is a dwarfed and deformed idiot of a type formerly found in families in the alpine lands, a condition caused by a congenital deficiency of thyroid hormones. So that word, under our offensive language dictionary, that would be considered offensive. Now, if we go to imbecile, it's the same type of thing.
Right. All of these things have clinical definitions. It is the intent
of the use. Okay, but what I'm saying is the intent of this word and the definition that you use, it's the sub-definitions that continue on with the same type of offensiveness. All we're doing is we're just moving deck chairs around, really. If you go to the term,
well, I think the young man, 30 years old, who penned the letter,
right,
really nailed Ms. Coulter's pelt to the door when he said, "I wonder if she chose that word because there were others that she would like to have used but couldn't tolerate the backlash."
I get that, but I mean, The words that anyone can come up with, for example, moron, a person of mild mental retardation having a mental age from 7 to 12 years and generally having communication and social skills, enabling some degree of academic or vocational education, this term belongs to a classification system no longer in use and is now considered offensive. So what I'm saying is all of these words come from a hurtful and offensive and harmful place. Now here's my main point. Should we outlaw this in comedy? Should we take away moron? Should we take away retard? Should we take away imbecile? I mean, because we would eliminate a Looney Tunes right off the bat.
You mean like what a moron?
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is, Bob, here's the bigger question I'm asking you. And I'm not challenging you in any way. I'm saying this. Who decides what is offensive in the dictionary world?
I don't think that, well, lexicographers are notorious for not being language police.
Mm-hmm.
They merely catalog usages.
Okay, so here's a bigger question. Why is retard seen as harmful and offensive, but imbecile is not?
Because of its cultural context.
But the broader question is, does it make any sense to change a name because it seems offensive, but the origin is the same? This is what I'm getting at.
Well, the question you're asking is really kind of, and I'm not putting here, but it's kind of a Dr. John question. Because it's a question of cultural context.
Okay.
Had Ms. Coulter been writing under similar circumstances 150 years ago,
mm-hmm,
it would have been okay for her to go ahead, as I guess she would have telegraphed it instead of tweeting it. It would have been okay for her to go ahead, for instance, and use the word she really, really, really wants to use because it was in the common parlance of the day. It was still hateful, but it was commonly accepted. And what the young man is getting at or attempting here is to try to make that word as intolerable as some others. He is trying to change.
He's
trying to change the culture. He's trying to change the context. He's trying to change the acceptability of it. For instance, the fact that moron is no longer used as a diagnostic term,
mm-hmm.
neither is idiot. They have only pejorative meanings. So when we have Moran Monday, everybody knows that we are deliberately trying to needle right-wing people of not much brains, or in better terms, when we do Moran Monday, for instance, what we are trying to do is to needle their own pre-existing hatefulness.
Do you think it is at all
fighting fire with fire, as it were?
Do you think it is at all acceptable to call anyone a retard?
No.
No. But it's okay to say idiot, moron, fool.
Right, because those words have been culturally excised of any sort of diagnostic or pseudo faux medical connotations. I mean, for instance, if you were to open the first few pages of Forrest Gump, the book, mm-hmm. not the awful movie. By the way, I came up with a new verb the other day, to gump. I haven't seen it yet, but I have a sneaking suspicion that the movie that everybody's making so much noise about, Cloud Atlas,
mm-hmm.
has been gumped. That means to take a book and turn it into something it entirely is not or was not. But anyway, if you scan the first couple of pages of the book Forrest Gump, you will find that he writes quite candidly that it took me a while to find out that I was a idiot, but I don't mean like one of them Mongolian idiots what is all the time drooling on theyself, drooling and playing with theyself. A, it's satire. B, it is written from a time perspective, you know, some years back, 1950s, when that word was still in use clinically, and that's the word I've been looking for, clinical usage. So, you know, the clinical usage of retard also gone away, and it is, what, a last bastion?
Mm.
I mean, for instance, idiot pre-existed the clinicalization of it. The word retard pre-exists the clinicalization of it. And we are trying, and you know, the right wing complains about that because it wants to use retarded, and the right wing would like to use those clinical terms, and when they don't get to and they get called out, in the case of Ann Coulter, for instance, they say that political correctness is just destroying this here nation. You know, I know that on Moran Monday, when I call them morons, I mean to be mean about it, because I don't like them. What separates me from Ann Coulter? I don't know. Except for the fact that I think I'm a little bit more straightforward about it.
So do you think it's a double standard when certain people can use the word and they get away with it and certain people can't? Bill Hicks used retard freely.
Yeah, he did. And Bill Hicks died in 1990 what?
I understand what I'm saying is even back then, when you went back then, it was still offensive.
Yeah, I think we all have our biases and we all have our prejudices, David.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps I would be more willing to hear the word used by Bill Hicks than by Ann Coulter. Bill Hicks is, if I recall the routines where he used it, again, he's kind of using it generally, whereas what the Coltergeist did was to use it specifically in a reference to the President of the United States as a stand-in word for a word she would prefer to have used instead.
Well, this goes back to the broader point of the word police in art, in presentation and comedy and all of this. I'm not saying using that word is not offensive. What I'm saying is where is that line, Bob? Because I'm because I brought this up before, and I think it's really important. A lot of comedians are being herded into areas where they can't say things. They'll get fined for certain things.
Surely to God you're not suggesting that Ann Coulter is a comedian.
No. I'm saying this. I'm saying it's that line of speech that's being put under attack in the entertainment world. And I guess what I'm getting at is who decides that? Because I watched a documentary on Lenny Bruce, and what he was talking about was so far ahead of his time.
You mean use the line about use the word until it loses its meaning entirely?
No. I don't entirely agree with that. But what I'm saying is who decides what's offensive on the performance stage, on the entertainment stage? Saying when someone punches a ticket, I guess what I'm getting at is this: is when somebody punches a ticket and they go to see your show, and they know what brand of performance you give, is it in their right to point at you and ridicule you and make you a target or a mark and immediately vilify you in such a way that the media does with so many comedians? Because I bring this up because one of the reasons why Eddie Murphy, it's a really interesting article for people who haven't read it, one of the reasons why he says he doesn't do stand-up is and it's in Rolling Stone, by the way, because a lot of the terms he said he would use would be considered offensive. And he goes, and we'd have to play this constant game of what's offensive, what's not offensive. He goes, they could just take out their cell phone and immediately call me a prejudiced person. And he goes, not even realizing that this is a
problem. Well, yeah, and Onward to Dystopia just shot me a message saying, I understand what David's saying. He just doesn't want us acting like authoritarians.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm getting at. I mean,
and meanwhile, and then Tamara just wrote in and said the R word. The young man was speaking for himself. She said, I think those on whom it's still used in the pejorative have the right to point out how hurtful it is.
Okay, but here's the other thing.
See, and there's a nuance here, David.
Mm-hmm.
Coulter was working within an established paradigm inside right-wing circles. I have seen it at work. I've had interaction with right-wingers who will sit there and tell you that with a straight face that Barack Obama is every bit as stupid as George W. Bush. And they've got their citations for it, you know, the 53 states or what, and most of it's just BS.
Mm-hmm.
But she was working within an established paradigm, and she literally meant to suggest that the President of the United States suffers from a mental disability. She was, and maybe this is the core of it, she was actually suggesting the re-clinicalization of the word. It wasn't being used like it's used in this one blog post that Tamara sent me from a young man who has a developmental disability and says, you know, it's hurtful when I hear this word.
Mm-hmm.
She was using it as a real live, no kidding, clinical description of the President of the United States. And she do you see? It's not a generalization. It's not just a slur. It's not like, I mean, it's not even like, for instance, when right-wingers call you, me, others, libtards.
So what should the offense be for saying this, is what I'm getting at?
Well, I don't, what should the punishment be?
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know for her saying this. I'll leave that up to the people with developmental disabilities who were offended by her. If they want to ball bat her at the kneecaps, that's fine by me. Well, no, it's not. I mean, I'm nonviolent. But I'll leave that up to them. Frankly, I think the woman should have been removed from the public airwaves a long, long time ago. What does she offer to the discourse? She comes up with these goofball books that, as Philip noted, are routinely purchased bulk by right-wing spin houses to make her look like a New York Times best-selling author when all you got to do is show up at your local Dollar Tree or whatever 6 months later, and they'll have 1,000 copies at 50 cents a piece.
But it seems like that person, she cannot get shamed. Bill Maher keeps having her on panels. Panel after panel, people keep having
her on. Well, that's because for Bill Maher, she's good TV.
I know, but what I'm getting at is all the media seems to put her on. We seem to highlight what she says. There is no punishment for her, is what I'm getting at, is there?
Well, even in the letter that I read, David, I don't think there was an urge toward punishment. Again, Onward to Dystopia points out they should demand that she attend the next Special Olympics, which is precisely the invitation that was extended to her. And he signed off his letter. What did he say? Signed, a friend you haven't made yet.
And on Alan
Come Cohn. Join us someday at Special Olympics. See if you can walk away with your heart unchanged.
I listened to an interview on Alan Combs. She declined that. So, again, you're back to, like, square zero.
Well, then fair game. Open season.
But there's nothing else. She said she's not going to apologize for it. So what I'm getting at is the fact is that everyone's just giving her more press. She's like the ultimate troll, Bob. She can't be put down.
Well,
I'm serious.
I think if she had used the word she really wanted to use.
Uh-huh. But that's hearsay, Bob. What I'm getting at is what you're just saying is an assumption and a hearsay. That's not going to hold up. What I'm getting at is the word that she used, is that word she used, and she said she's not going to apologize for it. So again, it brings...
No, because Republicans don't apologize.
I know. So what I'm saying is it brings us back to square zero, and we already know what's going to happen.
No, but decent. But you know what? It has served as perhaps a teachable moment for decent people with whom that word might occasionally slip out. And they will be. They'll be a little bit more careful as a result.
I definitely agree with that. I agree that that there is a teachable moment in that. But again, it goes back to...
I won't tolerate that use from that usage from my kids.
Mm.
Not to tell stories that have been told a million times before, but you know, we wound up taking our son to the emergency room after he had been put on the ground and stomped so badly that he needed to be examined. All the while, kids watched on as the people stomping him screamed "faggot" at him. Without regard to, and that's the thing, these things happen without regard to the accuracy or applicability of the word, if there is any applicability of a word like that. You know, for instance, the clinical qualities of the word that we're discussing here are long gone. There's really no word, there's really no reason to use it. And when you see it being used generally, it is meant hurtfully. I mentioned my early college days last night in a conversation with Harry. I could tell you a story now. I'm not gonna take too long. But you know, it is generally not used in anything but hurtful fashion. And it is used in lieu of physical violence in some instances. That's why a lot of states used to have on their books things called fighting word statutes. Statutes that recognize that there are some words in the English language that are so vile that to expect a person not to retaliate physically, it would be to expect a person to behave at a superhuman level. That there are words that have the verbal effect of a physical blow against one, against which one has a right to defend oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in answer to your question about what does you know, what does Ann Coulter offer?
Yeah.
Kate says she gives the media hours of conversation, just like tonight. Why do we give her this?
Well, technically, we didn't give her that. I mean, the media gave her that.
Well, no, I brought the story to the table. But well, I didn't bring the story to the table so much as a, you know, look at that horrible twit Ann Coulter, but as the reasonable response of an individual who is not called upon to be reasonable, but yet persists in trying to have some degree of social decency. And I think that's what the real story is. The real story is that John Franklin Stevens is far better at being a human being than Ann Coulter or any of those right-wing jackasses can ever be. Will ever be. You know, the text of his letter makes very clear that, you know, he was trying to figure out what she meant by the word. He was asking the same questions that you're asking.
Yeah, I think it's a really a complicated situation in terms of, for example, if some handicapped people. What if they still want to keep around that word in a few years?
Well, no. I mean, I can only offer myself up as an example.
Yeah.
A few years ago, somebody wrote in because I would I said something about, you know, Jesus, you know, kind of stuff makes you want to get in a warm bath with a box of razor blades, and somebody wrote in and said, you know, Bob, I've had people commit suicide in my life, and every time you use that phrase, it makes it all real to me all over again. Well, boom, there went that little throwaway cliche.
Is there a way you can, because South Park did an episode on this where they were talking about how they really did a really brilliant job, for people who haven't seen it, on the world of the handicapped person. And basically what they did the whole episode was they avoided any colloquialism, any kind of slang to a handicapped person whatsoever in the whole episode. And they just went around it constantly. And what happened was they treated them not like a person. And then Timmy, at the end of the episode, basically confronted them and said, I don't want to be treated less as a person. I want to be treated equal, just like you. And what that means is, However you treat kids in the classroom, I want to be treated like that. It was an interesting, thought-provoking exercise, but because basically what they were saying, and I agree with a lot of it, was the fact is that the more and more you dance around it, and the more you protect a certain class of people, and just this constant padding, and you dance around it, and you don't say anything when you're joking, it's like you're frightened to actually say what you're feeling to one person, to another person. And I've had that conversation too, Bob, with a lot of people who have some disability. See, I don't want to be treated less as a person. If you're going to joke around with me, joke around with me. I know my disability. I know this. And it's that awkward moment where you say, huh, because I think a lot of people, especially in our society today, end up not treating the person as a person by doing that.
Yeah, I think there's validity to what you say. There's wide open room for discussion of this. For instance, I have lately taken to reading as often as I can. I try to remind myself to go and read every day. Charles P. Pierce's politics blog over at Esquire Mag.
Right.
And he's a genius. And it was about 5:30 this morning when I had awakened early for some reason or another. And I was just, I grabbed the internet box and start reading, hoping to read myself back to sleep. And I laughed so loud that I woke up Agnes.
Mm-hmm.
And I laughed so loud because I saw an article or a blog post where Charles Pierce had referred to Sarah Palin as Princess Dumbass of the Northwoods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, you laughed. I heard that. There was a giggle hiding there, David, because it was funny. Because she has done so many hateful things to make herself sort of worthy of that level of wit. So I don't know what the answer is, and I don't necessarily know that we get an answer. I bet I get lots of email over the weekend, though.
I bet you do too.
I hope I hope I don't have to cancel more and Monday out of this.
And one last thing before I go, I did want to mention that somebody the continuation of the circus of politics. I see someone has tattooed literally a R on their face for Romney for $15,000.
Oh Jesus! With the logo or just the letter R?
Just the logo Romney.
The stolen logo from like the foreign shoe company. Yeah, you know that, right? They stole the logo.
I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, they stole the logo from a shoe company overseas or something. It's probably Eastern European or something. I can't remember. But that logo is stolen. And naturally, it's a Republican who did it.
Right, right. And I found it interesting, though, that they asked them, they said, would you do this for an Obama logo on your face if someone asked you to pay? And he goes, I've never been asked that question, but if I was to be honest, I would have to say no.
And with any luck at all, he'll be in the same position as those people who had little Timmy Jibo tattoos. Little Timmy as a Bronco, you know, literally, a centaur, you know, half human, half horse. Yeah,
well,
they had tattoos put on their bodies of that while he was at Denver. Yeah, those just turn into regrettable moments, and they're learning exercises.
Hopefully when we wake up to this election, we won't have a R branded to our nation. And the other thing is, I think you should give out the number, because I'm sure a lot of people who are listening did not have a pencil nearby, Bob.
Oh, you mean 304-658-3333?
There you go.
Okay. All right, David, have yourself a great weekend.
All right, nice conversation, Bob.
Yeah, indeed. Bye now.
All right, later.
Our pop culture correspondent with a significant and trenchant question, and because the neat thing about Skype is I can actually see who's calling. I know we've got Sandra. Hey, Sandra.
Can you hear me?
I gotcha.
All right. Hey, so I just wanted to share this little Twitter exchange that I had. It was hilarious. Okay, so this Terry Moran or whatever, he's some, you know, reporter from Nightline, you know, well-known.
Yeah, ABC.
Reddit, whatever. Yeah, he wrote, Romney headed for historical margins with white voters. Some will call that racism. Some others reverse racism. The divisions will deepen. And, you know, I just, whatever, sent off this. I said, racism is related to power. There's no such thing as reverse racism. Are you an idiot? And this fool replied back to me.
No kidding.
He said, read closely and please stop the name calling. I was describing what partisans would say to each other, see? And I'm like, your egregious ignorance is far more damaging than any name calling I might say. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Oh, my God. Well, you know, delightful little gatekeepers that the for-profit media are, right?
Yeah, I mean, he just sounds like a company. I mean, you know, yeah, of course, you know, I did a troll move. I don't care. But for him to respond, and he's an idiot. He sounded like an idiot when he wrote that first tweet talking about, you know, the historic margins with white voters and conflating it with reverse racism. And then he's trying to claim after he was called on it that, I just was describing. No, he wasn't. That was his.
That's
tweet.
Not what he said in his tweet, was it?
No. And he sounded just as ridiculous as, you know, what I said to him, and the fact that he came back with the nanu nanu nay, you know what I mean? Oh no, I don't know. I just thought that was it made my day. I put a favorite on that tweet because it was so damn funny. Stop the name calling, you know? Wham!
Oh God! But
I know. You know,
but no, that's right. Well, again, and you know, you and I share a love for Charles Pierce. And exactly. What does he refer to? Is it Politico that he refers to as Tiger Beat on the Potomac?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, they're a disaster anyway. They've been coming out with some of the lamest shit the last couple of weeks, yeah.
Well, yeah, this thing that you tweeted it to me, and then I also read Pierce's reference to it, this piece that they had out there, Sandra, about how Obama will declare martial law is functionally the same thing as worrying about the integrity of voting machines.
Oh, no, yeah, that whole trying to make it equivalent that voting suppression is somehow a conspiracy. No, that was just disgusting. It's like, well, no, that's happening. And how dare you try to put the equal sign? It's too much, yeah. I mean,
but
they're scandalous.
Well, they're addicted to it, aren't they?
Yeah, no, but it's out. But that article just, it was so absurd to see it in print. And for them to actually believe that argument is going to fly, it was just laughable. I was like, wow.
Well, bless his heart, Brad Friedman is going hot and heavy at Think Progress for advancing that BS notion that, well, you know, basically following up on Chuck Todd, who was our lead Moran nominee on Monday, that being concerned about the integrity of voting machines is the same thing as what he called birther garbage.
Well, no, I mean, all their shit is just being exposed because, you know, when HAVA, you know, the Helping America Vote Act, that piece of shit legislation was developed, all it turned into was just a new revenue stream for private corporations.
Right, it was corporate welfare.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it privatized our voting. And I don't really think, you know, your ordinary citizen can even, you know, comprehend what's going on here. We now have private corporations gatekeeping the voting, which is, you know, absurd on its face. And it negates a democracy by itself.
And I mean, now I can get a little bit paranoid because one of the things that Brad Friedman reported just a little bit ago is that President Obama early voted today in Chicago. And his early voting precinct had nothing but video game voting. And he voted on a machine that was formerly owned by the corporation known as Sequoia and has since been bought out by a Canadian firm that is now known as Dominion. Now, I don't know who owns Dominion or who's got tentacles into it, Sandra, but that's one of those dog whistle words that I've become very, very, very aware of.
Yeah, like liberty when it comes out of George.
Right, but when I see the word Dominion, I start thinking Dominionists.
Yeah, no, I. Yeah.
And you know that's that whole C Street crowd, that the ones who have stated that their goal is to take over the government of the United States.
Well, no, I mean, but the thing is, but until people, you know, as long as they accept that it's okay, that it's that the commons can be completely chopped up and owned, you know, we have a big problem because I was looking at a picture of, they had a series of election pictures from France, and they stacked the paper ballots with your choices. You take the three, pick the one you want, stuff it in a ballot box, fold it and put it in a ballot box, a clear box. That is the extent of it, Bob, and that happens in hundreds of precincts all over France, and then people count them. It's all paper. I was just looking at that gobsmacked, thinking, you know, what in the world is going on here in this country? You know, we are so far down the rabbit hole, it's just not even funny.
And I think some of that, Sandra, is a function of at the risk of maybe coming up with something completely insane, reverse bubbleism. Because we're tuned in. We know how unreliable these damn machines are. On the other hand, because we know that, we sort of assume that surely to God everybody else is too. But I, you know, as I noted, I've had my own experience with that. You know, that wide-eyed poll worker at the early voting precinct over in Fayetteville who said, well, why would, you know, nobody wants to vote on that machine. And I just looked at her and said, it's because it can't, it, there's no way to ascertain the intent of the voter.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just, you know, to sort of convince the whole public that, you know, this bit of technology is what's going to best serve our voting needs. It's just, I don't know. I mean, I'm just sort of stuck on how absurd and ridiculous it is. Yet here we are.
It was a solution for a problem that didn't exist. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and it was a solution that involved shifting billions of dollars to interests that saw a way to make a bunch of money and control the software so the election officials couldn't even verify if they wanted to. I mean, you know.
Yeah, see, I think it's more than called for that we have, and it's some pitiful low number of people who are going to be, you know, the right wing's losing their minds. I'm sure you've seen it. There's going to be UN election observers, and by God, if they come to Texas, we'll hang them. Get a rope.
Oh yeah, well no, and everyone's all up in arms, but I mean, it just says a lot that you have groups, mainly civil rights organizations, demanding outside observers for our elections here because they're so compromised, along with these white folks who think they're going to challenge Latino and black voters. I can't wait for that to happen because I'm anticipating hostility, a beat down, or worse. You see what I'm saying? I don't know how it's going to happen. You're going to go to a Latino area and you're some cracker and roll up on someone and do what?
Papers, please. Yeah.
What are they going to do? What are they going to do in, you know, the inner urban areas? They're going to roll up on black folks and do what?
Well, see, I think some of it is bluster, Sandra, because to the extent that they're going to do anything, what they're going to do is what they've done before. For instance, the necessary voting supplies were deliberately held short in communities of color in like Ohio, whereas if you were whiter than a bar of Castile soap, there were probably 18 machines and two people standing at them.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, it's just sort of the whole kind of turning voting into, you know, some sort of horrible chore that, you know, you're discouraged from doing if you're from a certain class of people. And it's the same as what they were doing in 1898, if I can just throw out any kind of horrible year in this country. What's the difference? You see what I mean?
Well, damned little.
And
save,
anyway,
you know, save for the technology. But that's what, you know, that's why people like Richard Mellon Scaife's newspaper put out that phony baloney article I was talking about that said, well, you know, if you're coming to the polls, be prepared to show your ID, when you damned well do not have to do that in Pennsylvania.
No, it's too much. But anyway, I don't know. I just was kind of, you know, weirding out on how a lot of countries, Canada, France, everything is, you know, a paper ballot, and they count them, and they can get the results pretty quickly that way. And, you know, we're saddled with this system now because it can't be, it's entrenched because somebody's making some money. And so once that formula gets in place, you know, it's damn near impossible to go back to something sane.
Oh, is there any going back?
Anyway.
What would the mechanism be, Sandra?
You know, the mechanism would be for local municipal governments to get out from under those machines, you know. I don't know what sort of democratic mechanisms would move that, but, you know, I forget which justice it was who wrote a dissent talking about, these corporations are our own creation, and we're about to let them just sort of turn into Frankenstein. I can't remember what Supreme Court justice wrote that, but you know, so we created these entities, and now they have, you know, it's like some sort of bad Arnold Schwarzenegger movie when the machines rule, you know?
Right, because, like in the situation that I have to deal with, they say, you know, do you want to vote on the electronic machine or do you want a paper ballot? And if you say, oh, a paper ballot? Oh, I'd love one, thanks. They hand you an optical scan gizmo paper that they then feed through the machine at central tabulating headquarters.
Yeah, I mean, and the idea that it's okay for anybody related to the person running for president to own voting machines, and there's no big outcry about it, I don't care if it's two or three times removed. The idea that a Romney owns voting machines in any capacity is just too weird.
And oh, no. I would have a problem if Tag Romney had an ownership interest in voting machines on Guam.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, it's an outrage, and yet and still, we're only a couple of weeks away, and that's okay. Also, this man is going to get away without releasing his tax forms.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, he's getting away with it. And, you know, I'm also stunned by that reality.
Trump stupidity, for all the kidding around that I do, it would have been interesting to see him say, well, you know, why don't you up it to $10 million and tell Willard to release 10 years of tax returns, and, well, you'll have my transcripts on the desk the day after he does it.
Yeah, but no, I mean,
it would have revived that whole discussion.
Yeah, so it's too much. Oh, listen, I wanted to, you know, this whole thing with Obama being lukewarm about the entitlements and, you know, the constant kind of wondering why won't this man speak up about the entitlements, since there's a 89% favorability about Social Security and something close to for Medicare, and no one wants it messed with. It's a vital program that people depend on and want. And so, you know Baker, the economist?
Yeah,
Dean Baker.
Dean Baker.
Yeah, he wrote this. He said, President Obama told the country that there is not much difference between his position on Social Security and Romney's position. There is a simple explanation for Obama's refusal to defend Social Security. In elite Washington circle, the willingness to cut Social Security is taken as evidence of courage.
Right, because that's the way the what do they call them over at Kirk's and Lighters? That's the way the villagers have defined it.
Yeah,
it's going to take real, because, you know, it was defined for years as the third rail of American politics. And then finally George W. Bush danced out on it and found out that he didn't get completely zapped.
Well, no, Obama's going to have that reality too. Because if he is, you know what I'm saying? It's really disturbing. Because if he would step up and say, I will fight to keep Social Security as is. It won't be touched. It doesn't contribute to the deficit 1 cent. Hands off. He would garner a huge surge of support. But the fact that he won't acknowledge something as popular is really troubling to me, because it tells me that all he wants to do is continue to be the neoliberal president that he is and somehow diminish those two programs.
Well, you know, that goes back to that remark made by Alan Grayson almost a couple of years ago now on the boat, where he said that Obama said that his big number one, you know, thing to do if he could just be Magic Obama was entitlement reform.
Yeah, no, and we know what reform means these days. It means to cut and, you know, just immiserate. And I don't know if he is in La La Land where he thinks that raising the retirement rate or doing anything except raising the ceiling is going to do anything but hurt a whole bunch of people and the economy.
Well, you said in that story when I was having the conversation with Jan in the UK on Wednesday night, Sandra, yeah, apparently austerity has not found its bottom in the UK yet. And this idea that pensioners should be compelled, I don't know what, go pick up trash at the senior center?
Oh, no, I mean, that has, like, garnered, you know, just a avalanche of hate. I mean, you know, these people in England, you're talking about now a level of hatred towards the Cameron government that's stunning. I don't know. I don't know what to say about it. But he's driven England into recession for no reason. Didn't have to be.
But if they're talking about, you know, if this guy who was a peer of the realm and a big mucky muck in the benefits sector, if they're talking about it, how long before some Weisenheimer like Paul Ryan says, yeah, that's a pretty neat idea. Let's make them work off their Social Security. When in fact, Sandra, that's all people have ever done all their lives is work for their Social Security.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying that, and let's just say it's not getting a really good hearing. But this is where they're at, though, where they think that it's okay to describe people who worked all their lives as burdens. You hear the sort of eugenics type Malthusian discussion in there?
Oh, hell yes.
All those people are the same. At the end of the day, it always comes down to some sort of eliminationist type of rhetoric, which is almost as disturbing as the policy they're proposing. It's like, at the end of the day, you really would like to see these people go away, wouldn't you?
You know, if you could take some of these right-wing geniuses, and like I said with Harry last night, strap them to a chair and fire them up with sodium pentothal, how many Americans do you think they'd like to actually kill off?
I swear. Well, listen, the other thing that was really doing my head in as far as, you know, weird Orwellian type of rhetorical flourishes is this disposition matrix. Disposition, that's dispose. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
You take that word apart, dispose is a part of that makeup. The disposition matrix is now, you know, this entity that's being codified for Obama and all presidents to follow, where they can just feed names and profiles and out comes out the next person they're going to take out with a drone? Listen, that is about as scary as you can get in this sort of inverted totalitarianism that we got going here. I'm telling you, I read that story and I was like,
Well, when I read about the disposition matrix, the first thing that came to my mind was that it was sort of an evolutionary offshoot, if you will, of the federal sentencing guidelines. Because remember, if you remember the origins of the federal sentencing guidelines, Sandra, that was the brainchild of a Congress that said, these federal judges are using their own brains too often. So now that's how you wind up with a guy who steals a pizza going to prison for life.
Right.
You've got sentencing guidelines that tie the hands of the discretion that we trust the judiciary to use. And so in this disposition matrix, what you've got now is the complete excision of the judiciary.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, don't forget, Holder, you know, due process is we do you. That's what it's been reduced to. And, you know, what you were saying about the sentencing guidelines, you know, we're at a point where Obama's congratulating himself for getting the ratio down to 18-1 instead of 101 for the, you know, crack cocaine thing. And I'm thinking, why are you congratulating yourself? It should be 1-1 since there's no damn difference between the two.
Yeah, well, except for the racial demographics.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm like, I don't want to hear about 18-1. There shouldn't be any difference. So, yeah, anyway, I think that this sort of formalized kill list is beyond the beyonds.
Well, this idea that you can sort of treat it like a, I hope I don't get in trouble here, like a Chinese restaurant menu, you know, where once you've got one from column A and two from column B and a choice between column C and D, that the outcome is, you know, cook 'em. That's creepy as hell.
Well, the signature strikes is also, you know, all of it smacks of, if I may go back to the, I don't know, 300, I don't know how many millions of women were sort of murdered, you know, over, you know, a 300 year period. But the whole idea that, okay, well, if you, drown, then you weren't a witch and your soul is saved. We have the same mechanism working here where if we find evidence that you weren't a militant, once you're dead, then, you know, you weren't a militant.
Well, did you read the story out of Guantanamo about the guy who everybody agreed was there wrongly, who is now dead?
Yeah, no, I've read bits and pieces of that, and that's some sort of horrible Kafka-esque type.
Right, and again, back to Charles Peirce, well, it was actually Tom Junod writing in his place at the time of the third debate about the questions that would not be asked at the final pageant.
Yeah.
Well, that's another one of those kinds of questions, because this guy died, and he was taken as a young man. You know, the joy of the apple of his father's eye, as it were. And wound up, you know, having his mind completely rendered functionally useless in Guantanamo, and now they say that they're not sure if he was whether he committed suicide or was shot trying to escape, as the old saying goes. They don't know if he jumped or if he was pushed. But the fact of the matter is, at the beginning of his first term, Barack Obama tried to put something, and apparently there was a big fight inside his new administration, tried to put something in place to get the hell rid of Guantanamo. And the Republican Congress, with a lot of Democratic connivance, said, oh, hell no! And so what is it if, you know, one father and mother's son was there wrongly and had his mind turned into jello and wound up dying? You know, it's one person in the larger cause of freedom, right, Sandra?
Well, yeah, and I mean, and, you know, you can say that if Obama did have a period where he thought, oh, wow, all these sort of extrajudiciary situations need to be rectified, well, he's done a 180, and now if you can't beat him, join him, seems to be the call of the day. Sorry, I don't see any of this going away, and when we have things like disposition matrix, you know, on tap, I don't know what to think. But we must stay on the, oh my God, you know, if you don't vote for Obama, you're going to get Romney hysteria that's going on now.
Well,
on our side.
But there, you know, there's an element of truth to that too, though, Sandra. If we don't like drones being used under Obama, Jesus Christ, what'll it be? Or do you think Romney will just say, you know, screw all that, let's send in the Marines?
No, but it'll be used. I mean, it's now become a part of the executive branch, but I'm still really disturbed by how refined the Obama administration is making it. It's like, huh? You know, this matrix stuff is well disturbing. I don't know. I'm not saying that, you know, Obama shouldn't get the second term, but
No. I wasn't suggesting that you were. But what I see at work here, I think you can even draw a parallel with the stupid voting machines. The response, for instance, once we found out that the voting machines were dummied up and could not be relied upon, the response is to go back to paper ballots and do that right, like the so-called civilized world does. But instead, because we're Americans and because we love our machines, we think, well, the problem to the solution to a machine problem is to build a better machine.
Yeah.
And in this case, instead of the deeply, deeply philosophically troubling debate that should have taken place over whether or not it's okay to use remote control aircraft to blow up Muslim weddings, well, what they did, it sounds like, is they said, you know, what we do is we've got to refine this process until it's less likely to result in horrific outcomes, instead of saying, maybe we ought not be doing this at all. because there are issues. There are issues that are, that attach to this that speak to questions of national hypocrisy, Sandra. That speak to questions of policy. You know, if we're flying drones around and killing people at will, then what do we do, for instance, when, oh, I don't know, pick one, Hamas, because, you know, we hate Hamas, when Hamas gets a drone and flies it over and, you know, takes out an Israeli security checkpoint? Do we tell Hamas, no, we can be trusted with them, but you can't? Isn't that another manifestation of the only white people can be trusted to murder people the right way syndrome that seems to so profoundly just infect our foreign policy thinking?
Yeah, and, you know, the sort of, trust me type of governance is, you know, detrimental. I mean, it's like the rule of law is totally breaking down in this country. And, you know, what's going to come out of that? You know?
Right.
I mean, I don't know if you've been paying attention to what's going on in Greece, but that's, you know, good times over there with the fascists, or just sort of gaining huge popularity now.
Yeah. We discussed this once upon a time months ago, but the prevalence of posters of Angela Merkel with the little Charlie Chaplin mustache plastered on her are going up by significant percentage points.
Well, anyway, listen, I'm sure you have other people, but I must say that I'm starting to wonder if Romney's going to win. I mean, I don't know what to think with all these weird shenanigans going on.
You know, there was kind of a turning point for me a couple of nights ago, Sandra, when I saw, I just happened to be clicking across, and there was the rerun of Rachel, and she's doing this entire segment on what happens if it's a tie. Now, when that kind of thinking reaches her desk, and, you know, I give her, even though she's for-profit media, and even though there's a certain amount of gatekeeping that just happens inherently, I give her a lot of credit for probably having a good, having a damn good head on her shoulders, and not being prone to just being swayed by the latest bullshit coming down the pike. Because if it should happen that maybe this is the answer. Maybe they're not going for the win. Maybe they're trying to get the 269-269 because they know that once it goes to the House, it's a lead pipe cinch that Willard Romney becomes the president of the United States.
Okay, so she was actually running the idea that you might get a tie, or someone might win the popular vote, or which
no,
one
it, well, an elect a popular schmopular, an electoral college tie.
Oh, okay.
Because she was talking, you know, there are two states in the union that have apportioned awarding of electoral college votes. One of them's Nebraska, mm-hmm. The other one's Maine.
No, that's right, Maine.
And Nebraska, Nebraska even took huge legislative steps for Nebraska to make sure that Barack Obama would not carry the Omaha electoral college vote. So when you're micromanaging at that level, doesn't it become at least curious?
I can't even imagine that we're headed back to the year 2000 type of situation. Is that what's being bantied about?
Well,
now?
Remember, you know, in Bush v. Gore, they said this case will not be precedent for any case ever, 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 ever. This is a standalone piece of shit that we're doing because blah blah blah.
Right.
Well, guess what? That isn't how the Supreme Court works. And so,
yeah.
You know,
there
really is stare decisis precedent for that kind of a decision to be rendered by the Supreme Court. And at this point in time, you know, what are we, 11 days? Soon to be 10? I'm a wreck. You know, last night's little bit of weirdness of me just trying to get away and talk about, you know, what it means to live in a community and a long life on a Greek island. I mean, I was struck by the, you know, you mentioned Greece. I was struck by the fact that article showed up, lo and behold, in the New York Times in the middle of what is obviously a really nasty crisis in Greece. But I guess we're supposed to just understand that on the island of Ikaria, everybody's 100 years old and you know, what's happening in Athens doesn't touch them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once again, you just have to sort of, you know, look fish-eyed at the media and, you know, what is the overall message they're trying to push. But did you happen to read that interview with Obama at the Des Moines Register?
Yeah, I did.
Well, I thought it was interesting that I guess they had a bit of a whole ordeal about it, but, and since this is off the record, what he said about the Republican Party and their relationship to Latinos, I thought was pretty damn entertaining.
Well, has he gone into some sort of candor mode? Because there's that in the Rolling Stone interview too.
Yeah. Well, they were trying to keep this one suppressed, but they eventually relented and the transcript was released. But I mean, I thought it was funny because he said that the Republican Party, you know, has pretty much alienated the fastest growing, you know, Latinos. I don't know. The whole interview was kind of, that was where he was talking about the grand bargain again.
Yeah, and I cringe a little bit every time I see that.
Yeah, so, but he was definitely, you know, candid about, you know, how, you know, stupid the GOP are. So, I mean, I think that's kind of funny, which could be a sign of hope that, you know, he isn't as daft about them as he seems to be, but who knows?
Well, I mean, but, you know, with the Rolling Stone thing, his reference to Romney as a bullshitter.
Yeah, which is as funny as hell.
Well, because he is, for starters.
Right.
But secondly, because that's, you know, I guess you could look at that and say that that's almost, what, Truman-esque? But I'm sure that the pearl clutchers, are in full-on straight-lipped constipation mode now, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really seen too much of it outside of, you know, a little bit from yesterday. But yeah, I just thought the whole thing was, you know, it's just a joke what they're talking about. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I am beyond disturbed that no one's talking about this climate change. And isn't some sort of storm from hell on its way?
Well, I mean, is that just yellow journalism to call it a Frankenstorm?
I don't know. I was looking at it. I'm like, oh my God, they're, you know, is this just more sensationalism for the media or, you know, or what's happening? You know, the way they describe the different elements of the storm kind of, you know, scared
me.
I
can tell you here in West Virginia, people are talking about it down to the gas station. You know, everybody always loves to talk about the weather, of course, but it doesn't, after what we went through with the derecho in the summer, it has a freighted load of an extra dose of creepy to it.
Yeah, but it killed like 40 people already, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's real.
Yeah. Well, it went over, what, the eastern end of Cuba, and Cuba actually generally knows how to deal with a hurricane. Say whatever else you want about him, but, you know, Katrina didn't kill 1,000 people in Cuba.
Those damn communists.
Right.
Curse them.
Right, yeah.
Well,
So, you know,
yeah.
I guess I joke a little bit saying that I hope we'll be broadcasting on schedule come Monday. But, you know, if this thing comes through, because what's happening on our end of it is that I guess, see, I got my, if you could see the video, I got my arms up and I'm waving just like a weatherman pulling shit down from Canada. It's going to suck a Canadian frigid air mass down that is just going to, apparently, at least in our eastern mountains, they're saying just slap the shit out of us.
So it's a combo blizzard, hurricane type of action.
Yeah, once again, something that we're not particularly familiar with. And just one more thing to throw out there, Sandra. This is a hurricane that begins with the letter S. That means we've been A through R.
I know, but it's Hurricane Sandra, Sandy.
Yeah.
I'm just calling it Hurricane Sandra just because.
Right. I think you're probably a little bit more compassionate. But this is the letter S. That means, and it's coming in the tail end of October.
Yeah. Oh no. Listen, I was looking at how they show the when it's moving and reading a little bit about it, and it sounds just kind of scary.
And they're saying that now that they're projecting it's going to come ashore in Jersey. I had a note from Randy in Pennsylvania who said that, they're expecting low temperatures and snow. Yeah, in late October. Of course, last October, speaking of weird, I think it was the second week of October when we got 4 inches of snow on the ground here, and I remember it because the Mountaineers were playing in the snow on a Saturday in New Jersey at Rutgers.
Well, I'm wondering if we're going to get any more of those pictures like we got from that, what are they called, Draco, whatever that last storm was, that one picture over New York. I mean, it's all looking out of this world type of weather, which I guess it is,
But how do you just look at it and say, these things happen?
Well, no, you don't say these things happen. It just looks like we're living through this sort of climate change, and it's not our grandchildren anymore, if you know what I mean.
Right. No, we get to it. I talked to after the derecho, I talked to, I talked to octogenarians around here. No, we've never seen anything like that.
I don't know. Listen, I hope that it misses you guys, or it's not too bad. I don't even know.
Well, we'll probably be spending the weekend pulling out the cold weather gear and getting coats and boots and everything out. And
well, it's probably better to try to get prepared, get some water in there, and so you don't have to suffer what you suffered through the last time, right?
I hope not. I 12 days without electricity.
That's why
I was out there this afternoon, starting up the generator, making sure there was plenty of oil in it, and gathering together the fuel tanks. That derecho wound up being $75 a day just for gasoline.
Yeah, well, no, and the thing about it is, in other places, a society would have taken the time after such an event to reinforce and make things better. But we know here, it's just further degraded. There's no repair. You know what I mean? It's just kind of patched back together, and then the next disaster makes the system weaker, and so on and so forth.
Not to ring too loud of an alarm bell, Sandra, that is how cultures collapse.
Right. That's what I mean. No, I'm not being flippant. I'm saying that seems to be what's going on, because the climate is changing and is relentless, yet there is no international or even national response. So.
No, you've got individual countries who are concerned about it, but here in America, I guess we're just waiting for some corporation to invent the anti-climate change machine.
Well, no, but both Obama and Romney, they ought to just be ashamed of themselves to be talking about, for 15, 20 minutes of energy policy and did not bring up climate change. That was shameful.
No, when both of them have a history of real statements about it.
It's outrageous.
The fact that the Obama administration has used a speech by Romney in Massachusetts across from a coal-fired power plant saying, "We will not license any more plants like this that kill people." And that's been used as negative advertising against him in Ohio. When for me, it's the one thing that says that, maybe once upon a time, the guy actually was paying attention. But that's when he was in Massachusetts. That's like him being
pro-choice when he was governor of Massachusetts. He had to call Salt Lake City, and they told him, well, yeah, it's okay. It's a liberal state. It's okay to be pro-choice up there.
Well, I mean, but, you know, you have California, you know, about to unveil their cap-and-trade dance coming up here in January. But it's, you know, too damn late, and there is no dividend component. The thing about that system, in order for it to work at all, is you tax the polluters and you spend the dividends on the citizens. But the dividend part is always missing in these schemes. Have you noticed that?
Yep.
Unless you're
there's
in
no
Alaska.
Payoff.
Unless you're in Alaska, those people are getting something. But, you know, so it's just, you know, I don't even know what to say. And as I said many a time before, if I didn't have these 10-year-olds and some other little people that I knew, I'd be like, fuck it. But you can't do that, can you?
Right. And
these little ones are going to be living in hell. Literally.
Right. And where do you go for the bailout? Where do you bug out to, Sandra? And I don't ask that rhetorically. I've been giving this a great deal of thought. You know, this is the kind of stuff Agnes and I talk about, you know, in the Mike and Carol Brady moments, you know, before the lights go out. Where would you go?
Yeah. No, anyway. Yeah. No, exactly. But my point was that the fact that there's not even a dialogue about this that's bearing down on us. I mean, this is, you know, it's not going away. Did you happen to see that man interviewed on Bill Moyer who took the photos of the ice over a 3-year period?
Yeah.
I mean, that was like, I was like, huh? I still haven't recovered from that because it was just so shocking.
It is, and the question, you know, and I guess we would describe this, what, as a systemic failure? Because if we can't have a conversation about it now, well, you know, it's an election year, it's a political year, then that's political dynamite. You can't talk about that right now. Well, can we talk about it next year? What year can we talk about it, Sandra? And I'm afraid the answer to that is never.
No. I thought that when they were being quite vocal about OMG, all the ice is going to melt completely on the Arctic Sea by 2015, but we thought it was going to be 2030. Oh no, it's 2015, yet and still crickets.
Yeah, and I get, you know, at what point does the political climate change so that, for instance, maybe the people who are earnestly and in good faith concerned about climate change can stand in a dialogue on equal footing with the billionaires who are determined to keep America stupid?
Well, I mean,
it paints a pretty damn grim picture.
Well, and it's really grim when you saw the trail of trailer trash that got hammered with these tornadoes. Remember them?
Oh yeah.
And all you got from Washington was like, well, we'll give you something if you balance it by cutting something else.
Right. Compassionate conservatism, right?
Right. So we're just like way down a rabbit hole on that. I mean, I was stunned by that. I'm like, wait, you lost hundreds of people in these freaked out mile wide tornadoes and you're nickel and diming these people? So, yeah. I didn't mean to go off on the climate. I call it
I'm glad you did.
Climate catastrophe. I don't even call it climate change anymore. Because
no, climate change sounds kind of benign, maybe a little innocuous. Yeah. You know, we might have to start farming in Nome.
Right.
Yeah, but everything's going to be okay.
But I'm also thinking, at this point, you know, what rich fuck besides that one that's dropping iron in the ocean? You heard about that idiot?
No.
Oh my God, some rich asshole, I'm determined to do this geoengineering, and that fool dropped like tons and tons of this iron to generate algae off the coast of somewhere in northern Canada. And it's just turned out to be a complete disaster.
What, did he have a vision from God or something?
I have no idea. It's just some rich fuck who found some way of goading whatever authority he needed to do this. I'll send you the link because it's just like, wow. But with that said, what are these what's the money? What's the bet that some of these billionaires are trying to buy up coastland off of Canada for their heirs and descendants? You know,
oh sure,
know that's where you're going to be able to survive nicely. Thank you very much.
Well, and you know, maybe one of the reasons that they're investing so heavily in China, and I I'm out on the paranoid conspiracy limb here now, Sandra. Maybe they're investing in China so heavily because, among other things, China is up exploring. You know, when the cap is ice free, you know, that's no man's land. I mean, anybody that wants it, or that's the argument, and they're up there exploring for oil. So,
well,
might be nice to be in good with those folks.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know, but there seems to be a lot of credible science out there that's saying that, you know, we have this 30 to 40 year built up climate commitment business where even if we stop, you know, with the greenhouse gases, we still are going to have this heating going on for the next three decades.
Right, just like scrambled eggs continue to cook after you take them off the heat.
Right, so we're already in that situation right now. And anyone who's, you know, born this year, you know, who knows what they're going to be looking at when they're in their 50s and 60s.
No, I see, that just, you know, you talk about your nieces and you know, my grandkids. Hell, my kids. You know, the 23, 18, 17, 15. What's, you know, what does their world look like in 50 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, I don't know, it seems like it should be an issue that should galvanize.
Well, see, that, and you know, it makes me a little bit crazy because I come through, you know, to turn off the Xbox, you know, find some news, inform yourself, you know, your world is in peril. But I guess they just get tired of old dad talking about that kind of stuff, Sandra.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, the girls just look at me like, you know, I'm some sort of frog talking to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, it's not registering. Sadly, it's the world that they're going to have to negotiate, and I just don't
right. They're know. They're inheriting whether they want to or not.
Hmm. You know, when I hear things like the world is going to be hotter than it's ever been since people have been farming, I'm like, what are you talking about, 10, 15,000 years here? Good night.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, that's like since the ice caps receded.
Right. So anyway, I don't know. I just, you know, I just think, oh, boy. So you got anything on the football scene, Bob? If we can, I guess we could kind of wrap.
No, I'm getting a merciful week's rest for the Mountaineers. So I'll just sit back and watch the people with competent defenses play tomorrow.
Well, I guess I got the Giants out here.
Oh yeah, that's been fun to watch.
But.
I mean, it's kind of neat to see Tim Lincecum as far as the World Series is concerned. You know, just being a team player and coming off the bench, you know, coming out of the bullpen. You know, for a guy who had the Cy Young a couple of years ago.
Yeah, no, it is. It's definitely, you know, that team is working quite well together. I mean.
Now, on the other side of it, I'd say that, you know, Jim Leyland of the manager of the Tigers is probably my favorite manager in all of baseball. Just because he's never minced a lot of words. You know, remember when he took the Marlins to the fastest World Series at the time of any expansion club?
That's right, yeah.
And then Wayne Huizenga sold the club out, just had the so-called fire sale. And
right.
Jim Leyland looked up and said, I thought I was brought down here to win championships. Apparently I wasn't. So there's a lot to respect there with him with the Tigers but I'm a National League kind of guy. Now I'm just in a world of misery with the Mountaineers. I sat there and watched that last week and watched the week before and going, God, you know, how do you come into a full on
you know, football season in a brand new conference with no damn defense. And then I'm reading along, and I guess I just missed out. And I'm reading along, and the Mountaineer defensive coordinator's never been a defensive coordinator before.
All right.
Please, excuse me.
That seems a bit ridiculous for a team of that caliber. How bizarre.
And I'm not buying this notion because by the time you're athletically good enough to reach Division I in college football. All things aside, all the ethical, moral, but if you're good enough athletically to make it to Division I, there's a lot of parity out there. So you can teach these young men to do just about anything.
Mm.
So it looks to me like when you're giving up an average of 55 points a game, that somebody, the grown-ups aren't teaching.
Well, yeah, because the kids, they have the right skill set, so it's a coaching problem, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Well,
and the usual excuses are coming out. Well, it's a new system. Well, they're playing a 4-3. Jesus, how long has that been around? But I've watched game after game after game. We rush three guys half-heartedly, which means that to one degree or another, we got eight guys in coverage, and they're still completing. They're still completing wheel routes and stuff out around the sidelines with 10-yard cushions between the defender and the receiver. No, somebody ain't teaching.
Well, who are they playing when they come out of their? They have a week off. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they're off tomorrow, and then they come back next week with TCU, which will throw the ball all over them. And then Oklahoma.
Well, listen. Speaking of Oklahoma, aren't they playing the hideous Notre Dame this weekend?
I do believe so. Yes.
Oh God, I've never been a fan, but I'm gonna have to go.
For the first time in my life, I'm gonna be singing Boomer Sooner.
Yeah, no, for sure. But listen, the only other thing I wanted to mention because I forgot was, can you please just tell me? You can make it brief. What's up with these white Republican men and the whole rape thing? What it's really, it's so icky and it's. I don't have words for it. It's truly disturbing when this person is up there saying, that's what God has a plan for your ass to get raped and get pregnant? Hello?
The only thing I can say is that I think it betrays the fact that they don't actually believe that rape is real.
Okay, so, and it's just these horrible men talking about it. It's like, the misogyny is just dripping from these people.
You'd think none of them have a daughter.
It's horrible. I look at these men and I just think, oh God,
Because God forbid, is there any among us who are so simple as to think that if, say, Richard Murdoch's wife got raped and got pregnant, that he would be saying, well, honey, we'll bring the baby into the world and I'll love it as if it was my own.
Oh no! It would be.
I mean, what would he do when he got hailed into court for the parental visitation rights of the rapist?
Yeah.
I think they simply their misogyny and their lack of regard for any female is so low that they simply do not think rape really happens. That's why you wind up with all these goofball, hateful adjectives, legitimate, forcible. I mean, my God, there was a bill on the table in Pennsylvania, Sandra, that included a provision that said if a family on assistance, if the woman got pregnant, that there would be no increase in the family food allotment unless she could prove that she was forcibly raped or a victim of incest, and filed a report with the police naming the rapist.
Okay, well, this is some Taliban shit.
Yeah, I mean, I was joking the other day that if Murdoch actually gets elected, we're going to have to change the name of Indiana to Talibandiana.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's once again, I just think it's, the fear of woman and all its, just women in general and these men and their issues. Ew.
No, they are. They're scared.
They are scared of women. They are scared of the feminine. This, I mean, if you were to haul out Joseph Campbell or somebody and that whole power of myth business, you know, they'd say that, you know, for 2,000 years of church hierarchy is all about fear of the female. Why else do you get, and I've been hammering on it lately, 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, telling women to shut up in church. You know, you don't want some woman opening her mouth about the saving grace of Jesus Christ, and she might show up the man. There is a tremendous degree of insecurity that comes with being male. Because a whole lot of people, especially right-wingers and authoritarians, Sandra, males, have no comprehension of how to live in a culture that does not revolve around them. And they are scared to death that at some point, I guess, the women folk are going to rise up and realize that, you know, there should be a degree of equality. The mindset that does what Murdoch says, what Murdoch said, is the same mindset that puts a bullet through the brain of a 14-year-old girl who wants to go to school. There's not a damn bit of difference.
Well, no, just the whole basis of, you know, they can't wrap their head around, you know, the idea of some sex, and they have to make up a whole mythology about some poor bitch just turning up pregnant, and all of a sudden it's Jesus. I mean, come on, just the basis of it is sick.
It is, and I'm still waiting for that moment when women, be they right wing, left wing, whatever, get hold of a copy of Lysistrata and say, you know, this is a pretty good idea. We do have power.
Listen, I really gotta go, and I won't be praying for your ass. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thanks, Sandra. You have a good weekend, too.
All right. Bye.
Bye now. It is the lack, you know what? I take lack of prayer, in good order. That's a compliment, too. Couple of emails coming in before we wrap up for the evening. From Andy, hitting a couple of topics. He says, the morons in Congress, Senator Dianne Feinstein for one, introducing and promoting the Help America Vote Act, ought to, at the very least, be publicly shamed for this garbage piece of flack legislation. Tar and feathering wouldn't be nearly enough. Instead, they get elected time and time again, basically uncontested. Ms. Feinstein and her congressional pals are congratulated and promoted by the corporate media as paragons of bipartisan legislators. Oh, please. Andy also notes, it's Etch-a-Sketch, it's Etch-a-Sketch time. This guy, Mitt Raw Money, can be counted for nothing. It's a clean slate. You can't talk about it, climate change, because your Focker friends in Ohio, friends of coal, might change their mind on voting for the big man in the White House who also stands for nothing, at least nothing controversial. And that was precisely my point in asking the question. Well, you know, we can't talk about climate change. It's election year. When, please? When? And, of course, what Andy notes about the lack of political opposition, there's a story out there. Can you imagine? I mean, who among us, honest to God, who among us would not feel kind of, you know, honored to even be on the ballot as some party's nominee for the Senate of the United States? Consider the sorry story of the state of Tennessee. Bob Corker has to run for re-election this year. His opponent is a guy named Mark Clayton. He's 36 years old. He's pro-life, anti-gay marriage, has literally one campaign sign, has raised $278. Consequences, schmonsequences, as long as I'm rich. No one in the entire state of Tennessee, in what passes for once upon a time a political party there, had any interest in running against Bob Corker. No, I mean, this guy, and he's not a power, he's a first-termer. That's the sign of a political system that is on its last legs. The last guy to run against Corker was, of course, Harold Ford. Harold, call me. Remember? Jesus. With regard to the coming storm, and you know, I'll tweet about it or whatever, depending on what happens here. Darlene writing in says, this convergence of three storms is bringing back really bad memories to the point of PTSD for us here in Connecticut, because we got hit with that so-called freak snowstorm, which took out Halloween, no trick-or-treating for the kids, because the state of Connecticut was shut down, with many people out of power for 9 days. I got extremely ill from being too cold for too long. I can't believe we're getting hit again at basically the same time 1 year later. But no, 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 there's no climate change or global warming happening. You know, don't pay attention to that man behind the curtain. Kate, who's kind of got some advance warning on the on at least one portion of the damn thing, says the Arctic cold front stalled here over us. It's a huge one coming at you. When the frigid temps collide with the warmth of the cane, hooey! Even the maritime provinces up in Canada are getting ready to be slammed. It hasn't gotten over 38 degrees here for several days. The front is a big one. Don't underestimate this one. We can only hope that this one loses some strength, but it's not likely because the Atlantic temps are bizarre and off-kilter. Kate says, glad you're attending the preps this week. All hunkered down and warm here in Montana. 2 days of light snow has all melted, but the mountains are still white. Yeah. We could get whacked, and it could be a lot worse toward the coast. But I'm scared to death of that cold air hitting that warmish air and what kind of hell and havoc it might wreak here. And there we were trying to finally get in position to do something about the damage that happened from the derecho. Might as well let this one blow through and hope for the best, I guess. Please, aged shingles, hold. And so we find ourselves at the close of another week of broadcasting as we enter our eighth year. Thank you to everyone who keeps it all going. Do remember, please, that just because we've made October's fundraising goal doesn't mean that we're flush or even in the good. If you can hit the PayPal button, it would be much appreciated. Thank you. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, Sparky, the moderator, of course, of the late-night, post-midnight Eastern time Horn chat room, Malloy chat room, Skype chat. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to my lovely wife, Agnes, for her help. Thanks to John Fox. And thanks to Ben Birch. Podcasting should get back to normal now. His sick machine is out of the shop and back to normal. So I'm told. Cross your fingers. I know Ben's got his crossed. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the people at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. If you do not yet have the coolest t-shirt in the world, save the endangered hillbilly, there's still some left. You can order them on the website at crmw.net for cheap. And, of course, ACHECT, ACHEACT.org. The single most important piece of legislation dealing with Appalachia that has perhaps ever been introduced. H.R. 5959 is its number right now. It'll be renumbered when it's reintroduced in January. But there's still plenty of time to get your member of Congress signed on if he or she hasn't already.
You can go to ACAC.org and learn everything you could possibly need to know about why it's important and how you can help. The biggest way you can help is by simply encouraging your member of Congress, Republican or Democrat, either one, doesn't matter. They need to be told, they need to be encouraged to sign on. If they are, if your member of Congress already has signed on, by all means, please do thank them. And so, with the end of the week upon us, I thank you for your time and your participation. And remember, Gina, Judy, it's all for you. My buddy Rick Smith is on the way, on the horn.